Tim Barrows. Welcome along to the Mumbrella Podcast, coming to you from the studios of CBS Interactive. This week, we meet Mumbrella's newest member of staff, Deputy Editor Camille Alacon. We continue our weekly saga, in which our regular pundit, Scott Rohde, tries to think of a name for his new PR agency. We ask, the Bondi Beach dance flash mob, hit or miss? Should bloggers be fined for taking sweeteners? And what's gone wrong at WPP? Plus, a slow start for Seven's new channel, and an even slower start for Eddie Maguire's first radio ratings. And PBL and Seven lose a few billion dollars. So, joining us as the new regular voice on the Mumbrella Podcast, new Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille, welcome.
Welcome, thank you so much, Tim and Scott. Thanks for having me.
And finally, we actually have a genuine Australian voice on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's kind of starting to
it's
sound like
a bit of a, it's going to be kind of missing, hasn't it?
Well, it's becoming a bad joke, isn't it? Englishman, a Scottishman, and an Australian woman walk into a recording studio.
It's great though, because I have the least Australian sounding accent, even though I grew up here. But anyway, let's just pretend.
Absolutely. So, Camille, last couple of years in London on Marketing Week before that B&T magazine, what have you learned about marketing while you've been away?
Okay. Well, Dad, I mean, it's a great industry in London, and, you know, you having come from there as well. I mean, you know the game. It's pretty much same shit, different country. But, I mean, obviously, you know, small fish in a bigger pond. Issues, obviously, I went there at an interesting time, fourth quarter of last year, when the credit crunch became a recession. And, you know, fourth quarter last year, it was a very different environment.
So you witnessed the basic almost destruction of the media industry at first hand.
Absolutely. It was very interesting, because obviously at the beginning of the year it was all about Northern Rock, and then as the year progressed everyone was just kind of doing their thing. The other industries, that is, obviously financial services was a bit stuffed, but towards quarter four, when the credit crunch was hitting the other industries, it was very much a strategic reviews all around across all the sectors, and obviously marketing-wise, marketing budgets were being reviewed, i.e. The catchphrase, or the favorite word used by a lot of companies last year, was streamlining. Everything is being streamlined, i.e. major cost-cutting budgets, reviews of agencies. Agencies were all, you know, they were doing their pants at the end of last year, basically.
Now, question. Something I certainly got asked a lot when I came in this direction to Australia about 3 years ago now is, what do you think of the difference in the quality of advertising between in the UK and Australia?
You know what, I was actually quite amazed. I thought that, because obviously in Australia, having worked in B&T, for example, we're always talking about how we're taking the example from the US and the UK, and, you know, they're the innovators, the bigger markets, and this is kind of tiny little, you know, we just follow along what the rest of the world does, and if it works, then we'll take it on as well. Then I went to the UK. I was surprisingly underwhelmed by the innovation, to be honest with you, because the reality is, being a small nation, having less bureaucracy in client side, for example, and also agency side, you're allowed to, you can be more nimble and flexible, because you have less bureaucracy and less levels to deal with in terms of client side, so agencies can just get out there and be more innovative. That's why I think New Zealand is known to be quite innovative in awards dues, for example. And so, I mean, in terms of digital, you know, we've imported so many digital guys from the UK, especially to Australia. It's like, I wasn't overly impressed by the digital guys. I mean, now, yeah, I think, you know, over 2 years, because digital does just progress so quickly, and we're definitely seeing that absolutely now, especially in social media.
So which of the digital guys were you particularly unimpressed with? Are there any names?
I'm not naming any names. I just was just generally speaking in terms of campaigns and just marketing campaigns and observing them. I just didn't think anything. It was still very TVC-centric. It was very TVC-centric. And obviously when you have the likes of one of the, I like to call it a custom publication, but it's not really, the industry bible that's produced in the UK, was still a very TVC-centric.
This is Campaign magazine.
This would possibly be it, yes. It sounds like Campaign champagne.
How did it feel working on a paper that wasn't seen as the industry bible?
Good. I mean, because I wanted to be taken seriously in the sense of... No, absolutely. Credit to Campaign. They do what they do, and they do a good job with what they do for the niche that they cover. And they know what they're talking about. They know their stuff. So that's fine. But obviously, in terms of marketing, and you want to speak to the clients, as opposed to just the agencies. We try to kind of have a wider grasp of what's going on. But absolutely, Campaign is a very credible publication, and you know the gossip
is
very
good. Backpedaling there.
The gossip is great.
Right. Well, enough of life in London. Let's actually, this is quite a good example because there are a neat little segue because there's at least a nod towards some marketing that came out of the UK.
Is that Vodafone?
Beach flash mob. T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
Yes.
That was it, yeah.
Earlier in the year, we saw a rather marvellous takeover of Liverpool Street Station when about, I don't know, 150 or 200 or 300 dancers suddenly rocked their moves, much to the surprise of the commuters, became a very celebrated ad over there. And of course, you know, the actual flash mob concept is older than that. It finally came to our shores.
It was going to happen at some point.
It was going to happen at some point. I mean, a couple of smaller ones. I remember Australian Idol tried to do one in the Mall at McDonald's at Pitt Street Mall, yeah. Which certainly didn't go viral. In the,
was that a mall or a mall?
Well, I've always struggled with my malls and my mals. So
pal mal.
Yeah, let's not mock my affliction of my inability to pronounce words good. So, Flip Beach Flash Mob, hit or miss, Scott?
Look, we've not seen all the footage from it yet. I was discussing actually earlier on Twitter. I think that the video that was released, this behind the scenes one, actually paints the product in a bad light. That's a personal opinion. I own a Flip camera. I got it imported from the US. I love it. It's a fantastic little camera. I take it anywhere. But I felt that the tearing as they moved the camera really quickly across the screen.
This is a technical term.
Technical term meaning that the screen kind of tears. I just felt that it put the product in a bad light. And the 720p HD Flip is an excellent little camera. It's fantastic for as long as you know, move slowly and pan slowly. But I felt that watching the behind the scenes kind of killed it for me.
In their defence, though, I think what they did was they posted very, very quickly. They obviously had a lot of camera crew there. They posted the first bit of footage so that they would have something to put up on the official YouTube site, because clearly other people who were there who just happened to film it were going to be putting things up on YouTube themselves.
I totally agree, but I still think that whoever had the camera in their hand should have moved slower. Otherwise you end up with what happened.
Good strategy.
Yeah, great strategy.
Didn't matter that it wasn't original?
No, I don't think. Look, originality, let's be honest here, it doesn't really exist a lot anymore. There's only a few cases of it each year I always get a feeling about.
Camille, originality?
Definitely not an issue. I mean, if it works well for the brand, if you've got the water cooler moments, the feel-good factor, I think, you know, it was good music. Good setting. For me, it's more the actual product itself. I mean, aren't we in a world of multi-use devices? And this is, I mean, how long is it until this becomes redundant? That's a non-marketing perspective.
Absolutely,
but
yes. It's that thing of, you know, it's probably bad advice to give to the client. Look, I really don't think you should market this product. Probably doesn't win you the
no.
business.
No, but I quite liked it, actually.
Yeah. Good music.
I mean, you just said, Scott, that it's actually lots of other parts to it. I thought it was just that one scene. And for me, what worked really well in the first flash mob for T-Mobile was that
excuse the rustling, by the way. That was me getting my... I've been sent a review one, which I haven't played with much yet. I just pressed the wrong button.
He's got a flip camera in his hand.
I'm going to film a few seconds, which we may even put up with the
thanks,
the rest
Tim,
of the whole
thanks, thanks, Tim. Thanks, Tim. The day I didn't shave. Cheers.
But sorry, you were saying...
I mean, what worked really well with the flash mob in our Liverpool Street tube station with T-Mobile was that the dancers, they were everyday people, which is similar to Flip, but they were encouraged to get some audience participation. So actually, it wasn't just all dancers the way it kind of looked in the Flip scene. So they actually got regular people, the regular Joes, dancing with them, and they really got into it. You could see the surprise in their faces. In this clip on YouTube, I couldn't see the surprise. It was all the dancers that were paid. So for me, I mean, T-Mobile, that was more engagement with the actual consumer.
And Scott, do you think we are now done as far as flash mobs are concerned?
I don't think so. I think there's still opportunity for some clients to be able to utilise them in a stronger fashion. It's one of those. I hate when cameras pointed out. It's one of those things.
Do the rip thing.
I'm going to rip. Yes.
But no, I think. Look, there's still clients out there. There's a lot of clients have came to us over the years and said, "Yeah, this is what we want." Especially after T-Mobile, there's a lot of times we've said, "Look, you know, just think about this." It's been done, but I think for the right client, I think there's still a possibility of something special to come out there.
Okay, well, certainly it's been a great talking point.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, on to the next talking point. Now, we carried a guest posting on Mumbrella this week, making the rather brave argument that maybe bloggers should be penalised if they take gifts and then, or even cash, and write nice things about products and don't declare it. So this was an opinion piece from Daniel Young from PR agency Burst & Marstella. Mm-hmm. It was a sort of more nuanced argument than I put there. He was sort of saying in the most extreme cases, and clearly one doesn't want to curtail too much freedom, but in the end you either pass a blogging law or you don't. This follows on from the US.
I think before they pass a blogging law, they really should have a look at their TV channels and the cross promotion that they do there. I think that this running ahead to try and get bloggers when there's still journalists getting freebies and not declaring it, then, you know, I think this is just jumping ahead of the gate. I mean, bolting out the gate. Yeah, that's a term. Because at the moment, there's journalists that get trips abroad. They don't announce it. You get. Let's look at Current Affair, who constantly cross promotes a whole bunch of products. And I just think that, you know, you can't just run ahead and say bloggers should be penalised. Let's pull it back and say we're all content providers. So let's take a look at the whole loss for that kind of thing.
Now, obviously, don't forget, sometimes with the TV programmes, what you do see is right at the very end, just in the credits, it'll flash on for a millisecond. We have commercial arrangements with and a whole bunch of brands.
But your average person has already switched over by then. So I think it should be, if you're going to do it with bloggers where they have to put it in the text where you're going to read it straight off the bat, then for TV it should flash up when that article is being talked about.
Harsh. Is that actually what you would like to see? Because I'm not sure I'd be... What I would prefer as a punter is I don't mind products being integrated. If they're seamlessly integrated...
Oh, absolutely.
It's the clunkiness that I don't like, not the fact that it's undeclared.
Look, it happens all the time. You know what I mean? But I think my fact is, why should bloggers just be targeted? I think that's unfair. I think that
like
you need
the net,
to...
Yeah.
Camille,
but also, I mean, I think
do you want to crack down against all journalists and bloggers?
I think the reality is that consumers are quite savvy and cynical, but also there's always going to be someone who will, not a journalist or anything, but it could be you and me, who are just like, question it, and then actually crack that, oh, by the way, did you know there was a commercial arrangement between this and this? And it always comes out, nothing kind of stays hidden these days anymore when it comes to commercial tie-ups, I find. And it can be anyone who finds out and just puts it out there on Twitter.
And then everybody knows.
Yeah, speaking of Twitter, absolutely. Social Media Club Sydney, big fans of Twitter, obviously.
Yep.
And one of the most famous members of the Twitterati is coming to Sydney and speak at Social Media Club Sydney. MC Hammer.
You can touch that.
I don't even know what to say.
Scott, what's your... You'll be there, presumably?
I will indeed. Once I buy my ticket, which I'll have to do today.
You need to organise yourself. The last time I looked, they were selling fast.
Well, I know.
Actually, let me firstly ask, just pick your mind on this one. And I should declare an interest because I have moderated some of these sessions for Social Media Club Sydney. This is the first one they've charged for tickets. Your reaction, just as a visitor, any resistance?
Not really. No, I think it was sometimes separate wheat from the chaff, because that's not derogatory or anything. I'm just saying that
to the chaff.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, there's a lot of people that pre-register who'd never turn up on the night. So maybe this will actually ensure that people who say they'll be there will be there, which I think is actually, you know, because when it's a free event, you've got 300 names there, and then you turn up at the event and there's 200, and you kind of, and then there's people scrambling for tickets over the week before and they can't get it. So hopefully, you know, this will make people go, oh, well, if I'm buying a ticket because I want to go, then I'll be there. And, you know, I actually appreciate that.
Camille, are you keen to hear the wisdom of MC Hammer?
Absolutely, if I get a media pass
to go. Actually, I must admit, because obviously there's two people speaking there. Drew Parks is also speaking. Drew
from Microsoft.
Yeah, he works for Xbox.
Who also happen to be the people who are bringing Hammer out to Australia in the first place.
Which, to be honest, it works together well. Now, I have to declare an interest here also. I used to do Xbox PR in Australia, so I do know Drew.
That was before you got fired from your previous job.
Would you stop saying fire? There's no firing about it, god damn it, man.
So what are you up to now then?
I'm setting up my own agency.
Really? And do you have a name for it yet?
Oh, you son of a... yes, I do have a name for
it. And yet you've been telling us for this for weeks, and yet I noticed that conspicuously you're not able to tell anyone.
Well, because I've got... you've got to put all the... Obviously, how long did it take you to set up an umbrella? You've got to put the blocks in place before you go out to the market.
That may be where I went wrong.
Yeah,
it's a slightly more organic process, I must admit.
But Drew Parks, I'll admit Drew Parks, is very, very... He's a good speaker, very interesting guy. And also, he's done the Xbox Live, which has a massive user base worldwide. So it'll be interesting to see from the Twitter perspective, which is obviously... MC Hammer's, he's a celebrity, so he's built up this massive following. Then on the flip side, you've got Xbox Live, which is just not really celebrities, it's just a bunch of kids getting together, or adults getting together and playing video games against
each
other.
Now, you're a gamer. Are you... Which platform do you lean towards?
I actually lean towards Xbox as a preference. I have PlayStation 3, Xbox, and Nintendo Wii. I have all three. Look, I'm a video gamer. I used to be a gaming journalist. Give me a break here.
Well, I suppose that probably... Do you also manage to have a life as well, or do those three force out that one?
How many events do I go to a week that you see me at?
I like Pac-Man myself.
He's coming back, I'm sure. So, moving on again, lots to cover today. It was Sunday saw the launch of 7.2, 7's new digital channel. I think we've leaned away from calling it 7.2 now. Relatively slow start in the ratings to begin with.
Yeah, only 1.8% in the marketplace, I think.
Yes, yeah, of the sort of free-to-air TV market, which put it behind Go, which is Nine's channel.
And behind One.
And behind One, which is Ten's sports digital channel, although I think actually, in fairness, for Ten... Sunday tends to be their big day because that's when they cover the Grand Prix.
Yeah,
you may remember me bitching last week that not for me anymore because my Freeview box broke after a matter of mere weeks.
So you can see nobody out there in the marketing world has given you a free to air box.
Well, I wouldn't be able to accept it, would I, after this previous conversation?
You can just mention that it was given to you by someone.
I'm not sure it necessarily works like if you accept the gift and mention it once, you can then have anything people give to you. But yeah, early days, do you think, for 7.2?
Yeah, pretty much so. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people that probably haven't even pressed up on their controller to see it even exists at this point. And I think, you know, we'll just have to see how it builds. It's got some good shows on it, as we said last week. And I think it'll just take time to get into people's consciousness.
Cool. Potential for Freeview?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, multi-channeling, new digital channels, it's been proven to, if done right, if cracked, broaden the audience, and good for advertisers, full stop. So just wait and see to see which one kind of can crack it faster.
I mean, look at Go. Go's 4.2% of the market. SBS, 5.5%. I mean,
they're quite close.
Yeah, really close. And Go's, how old's Go? What?
Go is months, yeah. mere months. Yeah. So, yeah, and obviously what then becomes really interesting is next year when they're all allowed to launch another channel again. Mm. So 10 are the only ones who've been vaguely talking about it. So
would Jingle be called 7.2.3 or...?
Well, I sort of... If you think of the word 7 as a brand rather than a number, is it any less or more illogical than ABC 1.2.3? Mm. You know, so...
I think it'd be confusing. The more you deviate away from the name, the more confusing it'll be for the consumer. So if anything, yeah, 7.2.3, I think...
But in my sense, Go works really well because you don't connect it with anyone. You just think, oh, it's a new channel.
That's
Whereas 7.2, I automatically go to Channel 7. Oh, that means I might get regurgitated crap.
I suppose that's the thing. Also with Go, you will probably, if you knew it's associated with 9, you'll be thinking, well, each program's going to start at least 15 minutes later than advertised as well.
Instead, so you go, it's Go. It's going. I want to see it. And plus, it repeats great shows.
I think maybe we're starting to overanalyze the word Go now. So that's the TV ratings. Radio ratings, they were in this week. Kamel, bit of a slow start for Eddie Maguire in Melbourne there.
Yes, I'm glad you asked me because I don't listen to the radio at all.
Well, also, you're not in Melbourne.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, so I think we're probably about 2 months in, maybe not even that, for Eddie Maguire's Triple M breakfast show. Big. You'd think he'd have the name to draw an audience, really, though.
Well, do you? There you go, nice pause there for everyone. You know, does it interest you?
Well, he's Mr. Melbourne. He's Mr. Sports. Triple M, blokey audience.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness...
has he overexposed?
Well, he does. Obviously, at the moment, the main thing he does is Hot Seat every day. But obviously, that's a sort of late afternoon show, so not everyone sees it. So he's not quite the Eddie Everywhere he used to be. Personally, I was a bit surprised. I thought the numbers would be higher. The one kind of thing in his defence is the audience fell by 0.1%, so that's pretty negligible. And the second thing is, it was like a double ratings period, and he was only in place for the second half of that period. So we'll see a better number when there's the whole thing. But also worth recognising that Kyle and Jackie O are back up.
Yeah, 9.8% to 11%.
No, Camille, although you don't listen to the radio, I take it you've heard of Kyle and Jackie O. You're
absolutely
aware of their existence.
The palaver and the kerfuffle around that. So this must be a new radio news story. Having an Eddie McGuire story to talk about as opposed to the Kyle and Jackie O.
It does make a very pleasant change.
This must be actually a front page story for the radio industry right now.
Absolutely. Now, another one that I just wanted to briefly flag up was this one from the... this was reported in the Fin on Monday, which is when they have their media marketing section, as does the Australian as well, looking at readership figures. And it was kind of an interesting one because it was asking some sort of intriguing questions, really, about why is it that the Media Federation is pushing so hard for individual on the day sales figures, because newspapers have been resisting it. They don't want everyone to know. It's they don't want people to know what the readership is on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, because obviously advertisers are booking the big days and not in the quiet days. But even more so, they would swear blind that it's different, but they don't want people to know the sectional readership. You know, they don't want people to know who read the business pullout, for instance, because, you know, they charge for the whole audience at the moment.
Yes.
So there's this huge row going on. But the interesting thing of this is, I couldn't help but feel that I was reading this in the Fin, and it really did feel like a newspaper point of view I was reading, that, you know, this sort of scepticism about why would people want it anyway. Lots of quotes from Harold Mitchell on, you know, it will just be confusing to have too much
information.
Are
you just seeing that newspaper's bias?
Well,
towards newspapers.
Yeah, but I know, though, on the times when I was a journalist on a magazine, for instance, I would always become, you know, quite offended if someone would accuse me of sort of pushing my own agenda. So I'm being a bit cautious about it. But certainly, the questions and the people being quoted are certainly coming from.
Yeah, it should be a neutral article where there's points from both sides, possibly, you know, commentary from two people on either side of it. But yeah, that article's slightly towards one side, but let's be honest here, newspapers, you know, there's figures recently saying their, you know, sales are back up, that kind of thing, but I suppose what they're doing is just protecting themselves, which is slightly understandable.
The TV industry, we were talking about TV ratings, have not had a good time of it over the last month or two. It's been results week for the Seven Group, also for CVC, the people who now just about own all of PBL, who own Nine and ACP magazines, which is a sort of complex path of ownership. Somewhat careless loss of several billion dollars.
Was it $3 billion?
Yes, between them it's about $3 billion. Now, some of this obviously was in markdowns, but effectively a very tough trading environment and lots and lots of debt. Camille, do you see a future for free television?
Do I see a future? Well, it's all about diversification of the portfolio, isn't it? So, for example, looking at new media opportunities, digital platform, brand extensions beyond the traditional TV channel. Because obviously in the UK at the moment, ad rates are down about 30% since the 1980s. So they're all kind of... Channel 4, for example, has been... Even though they're all making major losses and they're all a bit stuffed, some of them have been more successful in actually... gaining revenue from a diversified portfolio, you know, brand extension. So that's the key as well. Easier said than done, obviously.
Yeah. Actually, I was having a discussion about this yesterday. The problem is they don't always offer great content. Organisations that offer great content will succeed. If you fail to deliver good content, you'll fall on your arse. Because you look at HBO in the US, it charges for its shows. People... continually you go to HBO because they continually make fantastic content, and that's the way the world's going. People are now realising that they've got access to content online, they've got access to content on pay-per-view, access to free content on terrestrial TV type thing, But if you fail to deliver good content, then you know people will stop going there, and you're going to lose your advertising revenue.
Have their programming budgets been cut though? Have they been cutting them here recently?
Yeah, I mean, what's tended to happen is there's certainly been a big round of cuts for the stars. So a lot of them have had to take what have been described as haircuts on, you know, their salary packages.
Whopping salaries.
Yes. You know, and I guess what tends to happen is, you know, you've effectively got three networks doing their big studio deals in the US, and they're bidding against each other. So if they've got less to spend, then, you know, less comes through. But those tend to be longer-term deals. But, you know, you're still seeing significant spend. You know, you'll see the likes of Nine and Foxtel pair up to put in a pretty hefty bid for the Olympics, for instance, both the coming Winter Olympics and then the following Summer Olympics. So, you know, they've clearly spent significantly. But that's the thing, isn't it? You generally have to pay well for the rise. Mm. I mean, just look at SBS losing Top Gear to Nine. Classic example of a popular programme. Nine have got deeper pockets.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
That's the TV networks losing their billions. WPP. Now, this kind of sort of it's something that's been occurring to me. For one, it kind of crystallised. I wrote a piece about it in Mumbrella that we had a fairly healthy comment debate on our comment stream last week. But I've got massive respect for WPP. Probably, very nearly the biggest global holding group, but I'd make the argument the best in terms of, you know, some of the actual content it has within it, in terms of the advertising agencies, the media agencies. But they're just really stumbling in Australia.
Yeah, what was their gross profit? 16,000 or something?
Yeah, I mean that was actually quite
I was blown away by that figure.
Yeah, well, I mean there were two things. So there was a part of the WPP family in Australia had only just stayed in profit. You know, it was in the thousands, not the millions. But that, you know, that's just a sort of subset of the whole sort of WPP family. You know, that was mainly on the advertising agency side of things. But the media agencies are struggling as well. You know, you've got Mediacom lost the David Jones account, which was massive for them, particularly as in the whole Westpac amalgamation with the St. George, that went over to OMD. You know, bad luck. They've also had some international realignments. But the fact remains, I was always a bit almost intimidated walking into a WPP agency in the UK, and it's not the same feeling here. And I don't know why it is. Camille, why is it?
Here. I mean, I find that a really odd story because I read your piece as well and I wasn't so aware that that's what's been happening here. But it's interesting because I thought that actually that the big networks around the world were kind of capitalizing on the recession, because what we're seeing are big companies consolidating their business into big agency networks. So the strengths of the big ones like Group M's, you would think, would be gaining the most out of this, because at least I know from the ad agency perspective, all of the networks are pitching for global regional businesses and they're kind of like rubbing their hands. So you would think media agencies especially would be in a good position. So I don't understand what's happening in Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of think that'd be a great clip to use in the future, wouldn't it, just Camille? I don't understand what's happening in Australia.
Yeah, really stupid team.
Put in every minute.
My expert opinion.
We'll just re-edit the podcast each week, and just whatever Camille gets asked, we'll use that clip. For any weeks that she can't make it, we'll just edit that in. That'll be perfect. Okay, this is has been another good PR debate, actually. PR ad value equivalence.
Oh.
Now, I bet, as a PR person, you've used them at some point. Even if you wouldn't promote them or argue from that, I bet you've used them to impress a client at some point.
Did you hear it?
I'm sitting back and waiting for the justification. Start maybe by explaining what ad value equivalence are.
Okay, so when you're in PR, you'll get somebody from a marketing somebody in marketing for a company say to you, I want ROI on this. I want you to, and the standard for years and years is 3 times the ad value. So A, you have to go and trawl and find the ad value, because, you know, we're not in advertising. That's, we don't do that. So then you have to trawl for that. Then you have to times it by three. Then you put in a big database and you have to go, this is the equivalent ad value that we just got you for this campaign.
So in other words, if someone writes about your campaign and it's a full page piece, yes, you just multiply it times three times the
ad value.
The what it would of course cost to buy a page.
Yes.
And this is even if there's a single mention of the product in the article on the page.
Look, it's a formula I don't agree with.
But I bet you've used.
I've worked on campaigns where it has been used. I've always argued against it. I just don't think it, I don't, look, the point of public relations isn't to come up with ad value. And anybody in marketing, if you're listening, and I know you are, please don't go to your PR agency and ask them to do this. I know you're looking for a figure at the end of it all to take to the people above you, but when it boils down to it, it doesn't actually do anything.
But I've spoken to marketers, excuse me for interrupting, who complain bitterly about the fact that their PR agency still insists on doing it and giving them the information that way.
Well, get rid of the agency.
Well, funnily enough, the person who's complaining is thinking about doing that very thing, and that's one of the sources of irritation.
That's at Scott Rohde. You can contact me later on today.
If only that you're able to tell them what your agency was called.
But what happens if it's an agency who can't afford to lose clients in this day and age, especially? How do you re-educate them?
You just, honestly, I think this is the key time to do it. You need to sit down and say, look, I know this is how you used to do it, but we've got a new value. You can look at positive and negative sentiment. You can look at, if you want to really cut, I mean, realistically, the clipping should be enough, but what they actually want is it cut down to its core sense of the smallest, you know, here's what it is, and you get a little bit of paper with a bit on it. When, you know, you should actually, the report at the end of a campaign should be, have a summary, point out the highlights of the campaign, and it should also have, you know, pages and pages of all the coverage that you got. And I think that's, you shouldn't be placing ad value onto any of it. That's a personal opinion, and I know a lot of PR people agree with me.
That's where we have to leave it for this week. Hopefully next week Scott will be able to tell us the name of.
Just so close to bringing up one more thing.
I'll go on then, very, very quickly.
Just quickly, ABC.
Yes.
You know that they got rid of one of their presenters on their Good Game TV programme. So they got rid of a guy called The Junglist, that's his Twitter name. And they brought in a female. And obviously on their forums, this is quite an actual digital kind of story, because on their forums there was a big stink kicked up because he came out and said, you know, that the reason for him getting put off the show was because they wanted to bring in a more female
balance.
Yeah, and also to get the more mainstream, which is obviously the way a lot of the gaming companies go now. They want mainstream because they think they've got the hardcore gamers in their pocket. And obviously there was like 60, 70 pages on a forum of this. Then the story went onto the SMH front page, onto the news.com front page. It was just interesting to see such a tiny little niche just expand so quickly because of, you know, one person actually coming out and saying what their opinion was, and then the backup side of that. So I just thought I'd talk about that.
Well, that's the nature of Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah.
Stories can very, very, very quickly escalate. You know, I mean, I guess the question would be the whole, and it seems like we talk about this every single week, the whole iSnack 2.0 debacle. Mm. Would that have been as debaculous if it hadn't been for Twitter?
Oh, I don't think so. That's all I'm going to say.
Camille, any other business?
I'm good.
Excellent. Well, we are done for this week. Next week, hopefully, we finally get to find out what Scott Rohde is going to call his PR agency. And obviously, whatever name he chooses, we'll take the mickey out of that name. But for now, Camille, Scott, thank you very much. Thanks to the guys from CBS Interactive for lending us the studios again. But for now, I'm Tim Burrows, and that was the Mumbrella Podcast.